can you not cough?
I thought he was laughing. Is that the sound of him coughing? Welcome to Thinking Deeply About Primary Education, the podcast that makes time and space to think about pedagogy, teaching and learning, professional development, anything of interest to time-poor but enthusiasm-rich primary teachers. This week, I'm joined by Shannon Doherty.
Hello.
And Lloyd Williams-Jones.
Hello there.
And in this episode, we're going to explore engaging parents and carers with mathematics at home. But first, Lloyd, what you reading for?
Hey, what you reading for?
So I have recently reread a blog by Cassie, modern Cassie, as she is on X, formerly Twitter. She put a blog out about 2 or 3 weeks ago around Send, and it is fantastic. It's genuinely an excellent, excellent blog. It is sort of inspired by a paper by, I think, Tom Rees and Ben Newmark, which was done by Ambition with a roundtable in coordination with them, I think. And it's just a stunning bit of writing and a superb framework to look at the quality of your SEND provision in your schools. She really like carefully goes through the framework that OCMAT, her group of schools, use to sort of quality assure their offer for this end offer. And it really probes thinking around the offer for all children. And I teach in Kent also, like Cassie, so we use the mainstream course standards, which she references. And it's just fantastic. It made me think so much. I think I've read it 3 times now. And every time I've written copious notes from it, shared it with Arsenko, and he was like, "Oh, this is so good." Just so thought provoking. I think one of the things that stood out for me was around, like in our school, we have like quite a lot of challenge. We have like a significant amount of children that have like susceptible and have like complex need, and it's about, you know, how you make sure the culture is there for all children. And we do all this work to ensure that the reasonable adjustments are in place for children. And she said, I think it's like, we've got to consider all children and the culture in the whole school. What the triggers are, what are the pinch points, the sort of sensitivity pinch points and so on. And she said, I think the quote she used was, "We wrap them up in cotton wool and put them right by the fire." And I think that's just an absolutely stunning quote to use, because it made me think so much about what we do with our children. I would implore you to go and read that blog if you haven't already done so. Probably have, because I've had thousands of shares. But if you haven't already done so, go and check that blog out, because it's absolutely fantastic. Shannon, what are you reading for?
I have started dipping in to a book that I got sent from Routledge called Unleashing Great Teaching, The Secrets to the Most Effective Teacher Development, which is obviously quite closely linked to my role as teacher development lead. And it's by David Weston and Bridget Clay. And it's just, I've only started it recently in the last kind of few days, but it talks about things like just like professional learning, implementation, the purpose behind it, impact, culture, things like engaging with experts. So I'm really excited about it, and I just think it's the kind of book that I need. And it was written a couple of years ago, so I'm not really sure why I haven't read it until now. But I'm looking forward to it, and I'm going to the Teacher Development Trust conference in January, and both of those people will be there. So I'm hoping that I'll get through it over Christmas, and I can pick their brains some more when I see them. What about you, Kieran? What are you reading for?
Nice. Me and Tony went to the teacher development, or I think it was a forum rather than a conference, but it was sort of like a conference, but you get to choose your workshops. Really, really good. I was a long time ago now. That was maybe 2018, 2017-ish. And a lot has changed. A lot of stuff they were talking about has actually changed in the way that they were talking about it. So yeah, probably well worth your time. Anyway, I am going to recommend another podcast. I saw this sort of promoted over the weekend and I checked it out this morning. It's from some of the lecturers and students at my, how do you say it? Alma mater. I don't know. I feel like I should have an American accent. Alma mater. St. Mary's, back in Belfast. Shannon's mouth in Mata. But basically, yeah, the guys at St. Mary's, led by, I think, Dr. Geraldine McGuinness Clark, are essentially, they're making a podcast for student teachers. But I actually think the episode they've got out now is really, really pertinent for all teachers. And it's called Perfect or Perfectly Good. And it's essentially about the mental health burden we place on ourselves when we strive for perfectionism. And obviously, I think a long time ago, Chris Such sort of, I don't know if he coined it, but he said, good enough is. And it's definitely in that vibe. And so I reckon people should check it out. And I'm looking forward to seeing the direction they take that. So, as promised last week, special Christmas games edition. Well, maybe that's given the plot line away. But it's
game away.
I was trying not to
I thought you would. I literally thought you were joking. I was like, is he?
<Ba-dum-bum>.
Given the, maybe that's giving the game away. But we're thinking about engaging parents, carers, anyone who's at home with kids in mathematics or with mathematics. And I think probably the first thing to think about, because it can be a substantial time investment. And I'm going to throw this your way, Shannon. Why should we try to engage parents or carers with mathematics at home?
My biggest reason would be because I have sat through countless parents' evening appointments where the parents have said, oh, I'm not a maths person. They're not mathsy. Oh, I'm much more of an English person. Or they're like their dad. Their dad's into maths. And I just think we need to eradicate all of that talk. And by getting parents engaged and by getting them, you know, talking maths, doing maths, problem solving, playing games, all of those things, we'll try and break down those barriers that some adults have. I think we have probably so many adults who are a similar age to us or older who had a really bad time at math with maths at school. And, you know, for whatever reason, it wasn't taught as effectively as I think we're teaching it now. It certainly wasn't broken down and we didn't kind of delve into the conceptual side of things very much. And so I think lots of people have that wall up against maths. And we need to get children on board, we have to get the parents on board, because so much of what the children say and do comes from what they hear at home, what they experience at home. And if they're hearing, I'm not a maths person, then they're hearing it's okay to not be a maths person, and therefore they might not be engaging in class. So I think if we break down that barrier, increase parents' confidence with maths, we're therefore going to increase the children's kind of involvement with maths. And then we can start developing their kind of understanding around the resources that we use, the strategies we use. And I just think it will make for a happier place, a happier world, if everyone is engaging in math.
Yeah, I'll sort of echo what Sharon's saying there. It was the first thing on my list, so I crossed it off. it's spot on. What I think the only thing I'd add to it is, like, it's funny, isn't it? It's like people don't go, you know, you say, you hear it so often, then you're like, you know, oh yeah, I'm not very good at maths. No, nobody says, no, I can't read for toffee, I haven't got a clue, don't know what that says. People, you just don't hear adults saying that in the same way, like, just you just don't hear it. And like, why, you know, like, it's that kind of like societal attitude towards maths, about the fact it's okay to be not good at maths, it needs shifting, doesn't it? And I guess at the heart of it, this is why we engage, isn't it? This is why we go out to engage. I think, like, fostering a love for maths at a really, really early age as well, and is really, really important, isn't it? I think why we try to get in, and particularly get in early with parents, really helps to sort of bring that on. And I know like maths is you know, Kieran would be able to quote the research on this, but is like obviously the success in early maths obviously leads to outcome better outcomes later on in academic success, I believe, which, you know, so it's just a win-win really to promote maths early on and to get in with parents to sort of and I think what's really important as well is that kind of moving away from sort of giving information to communicating maths to parents. I think that's really, really important, and that we sort of work with parents, not to pitch it against, you know, it's not us and them. It's that collaboration around engaging with parents.
It's really funny because in my notes, I've also got children who have a mathematically rich early years or more likely to have a positive experience later on. And then in brackets, I've put, Kieran can explain the research for this one. So we're on the same wavelength here, Lloyd. I like this. I'm going to add one more thing before Kieran adds his ideas.
Over to Kieran with the research.
I think even those parents who are trying to engage with their children's maths learning at home maybe also just need to have something communicated. I liked what you said about instead of delivering information, we're communicating the maths to the parents or with the parents, because I think that there is a tendency in parents to go to the procedural side of things and go for methods and writing things down too early. And as much as I was a child who loved it when my dad would write me a page of column addition and subtraction or multiplication division when I got to that, there's something more to happen in between. There's a step that we're missing. And so I think if we can get parents on board understanding how we teach so that we can focus on that kind of conceptual depth rather than procedural breadth, then we're going to be in a better place. And I think the relationship that we'll have with the parents then will become better as well, because often, I don't know about you guys, but I've had parents come in and say, I just don't understand how you're teaching it. That's not how we're doing it at home. And it's like this, like there's a confrontational element there, but it doesn't need to be that. It's about us working together and saying, oh, you know, have you tried this? Or this is what we're trying to do at the moment. And quite often I'll send, if I ever have to send like homework home, and in the school that I work in at the moment, we send maths homework home. And I'll often say, I'll write a little note saying, you might be tempted to dive into column method here, but this is how we're doing it. And I'll try and give an example, because I really need them to be on board. And our parents are really on board, and they're really helpful at home, and they're happy to help, but we have to work with them. And I know that lots of schools have tried parent workshops and had kind of varying success with that. But just anything you can do, like those little notes home to say, try this way, this is what this means. This when it says use place value counters, this is what I mean, or deans, because quite often we're expecting, I think, the children to read that and go, I know what to do here, Mum, don't you worry. So I think anything we can do to communicate the conceptual side as well is going to put us in a better place.
Just before Kieran comes in with a bit of research here and probably even more erudite things to say, I do have a little bit of research to offer. Raya in 2002, and I think this sums up exactly what you were saying, Shannon, said, unlike the harmonious anodyne relationship presented in many of the parental involvement texts, in reality, parent-teacher relationships are characterized by a struggle for control and definition. And I think that is exactly what you're hitting on there. It's that combative kind of like pitching that just leads to a breakdown, doesn't it? And I'm sure we'll delve into it later, but I thought that I just had to put that in because I think you sort of said exactly what that quote captured.
You just said you had that just ready to go. That is expert note usage. Oh yeah, so there is one bit of research that I've got, because no one told me they were throwing research my way to sum it up. And actually, slightly awkwardly, this is one of those things that I see many different presentations of the same idea. It's like early reading is the biggest determiner of X, and science results are the biggest determiner. And actually, I don't pay much heed to them. But There was a study that was published in 2021. Can't remember the group, but it was government funded. And essentially it looked at the impact of GCSE grades on potential future earnings. And the boundary between a C and a D in mathematics was essentially the pinch point. You know, if you get a C, then everything opens up for you. If you get a D, then you're significantly disadvantaged, D and below, essentially. And so who was it? It was independent of the government, but it was government funded. And they were essentially just looking, you know, because they're using C and D. So they're clearly looking at historic data to draw these conclusions. But yeah, I thought, yeah, essentially those people who are engaged with mathematics, because like you guys are saying, the whole, you know, it's a much better experience if your early experience is better, then you're going on to get decent qualifications, and then you're going on to sort of earn more in the long run, you know. So that reason alone, I think. There was actually a conversation on Twitter about people saying I'm not good at maths. I can't remember, it was possibly one of the North American podcasters, either Zach Groschel or is it Anna Stoka or Stoka? I know I'm going to mess up her name, but they were talking about how maths is important, but learning to read is more important. So maybe worth looking in the Twitter vault for that one, because they were actually discussing that. So, but I think, yeah, maths is, people who engage with mathematics, people who have decent qualifications in mathematics are likely to be successful, however you measure it, in their later lives. And so for that reason alone, it's definitely worth engaging. And also the kids who do maths at home, who do things at home, like your rock stars and stuff like that there, they come into year four knowing their times tables. You know, I mean, I always take my oldest as an example, but he 15 minutes a day, you know, I insisted that he did it. And between September and December, he learned them, you know. And maybe he's atypical because he's got a math expert-ish for a dad, but I didn't give him any guidance. I just said, do this for 15 minutes every day, a little and often, and that was it. And you see those kids in school, don't you?
Yeah, I've certainly got one in my class at the moment who I've put onto the next tables because they have mastered up to 12, but times 12. And I truly mean mastered. They're incredible. And so now they're looking at 13s and then 14s. And that's really exciting that I can do that. But that's, you know, that's not every child, is it? But I think you're right, if they're engaging and they're doing those little and often things at home, they unlock an awful lot. And like you said, they go into year four knowing things. And I think it's not hard. I know people are busy, I know people work, but I think we can make time for the things that are important. And actually, anecdotally, my cousin Naomi, shout out if you're listening, she won't be, she's not a teacher, but she has a child in year three, and quite often she'll send me a message and say, Shan, is this kind of reasonable homework, or is this reasonable to expect this? And the last one was you know, logging into Timetable Rockstars, I think it was five times a week, the spelling program app, the like online reading books as well that have been sent home, like paper maths homework or on like Mathletics or something like that. And it was really adding up. And I just said, the thing out of this list, the things that I'm seeing that are important are the reading and the Timetable Rockstars. So do those. Like, her and her husband both work long hours, and you know, they work in London, so they're getting the train back, and they're kind of picking them up from after school club. But those are the things that I think those are things that are the most important. I think reasonable people would agree. I think it's when we expect too much from our parents that they're just likely to disengage completely, and they won't even then try and do the Times Over Rockstars or the daily reading, because it all feels completely overwhelming, which is much like any human and the children that we teach, isn't it? I think we have to encourage their engagement and create an environment where they're going to engage with their children's mathematics learning. We have to think about, okay, so we're asking them to do this regularly, so what are we taking away? classic of what, you know, we do that whenever we think about new things that we're implementing or things that we think are important. And I think some places are missing the mark somewhat.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure the boys' schools, they say, if you can't do anything else, do the spelling. And then everything else is a bonus on top of that. Because we get like, you know, here's a map of all these different rich tasks you can do. Choose three out of the next four or whatever that area, kind of thing. So, yeah, so in the morning time, I get the boys ready, breakfast dressed, and then they learn Japanese at the minute on Duolingo. And they want to go straight to it. And I say, okay, you've got to do your spelling first, then you've got to do your maths, and then you can do your Duolingo. And so that they do five minutes each across all of those. And we, like I say, I think we're almost certain we're supported by the school in terms of, you know, if it gets too much, because sometimes it does. We've had Sundays where the oldest wants it to be perfect, or the youngest isn't bothered and doesn't want to write a sentence, and so it can sabotage a whole afternoon. So I think you're absolutely spot on, Shannon.
I think my first sort of point on this would be we need to move away from like a deficit model where the schools perceive the parental community to be lacking or like not have something. Like, we need to get our mindset as a teaching community like out of that mindset of like as if they're broke and we need to fix it by doing this parental engagement fixing stuff. That like sort of mindset is wrong and like leads to, I think, like these like kind of like poor practices around parental engagement. I'm sort of doing some work this year. It's not with maths. It's to do with RSE, Big Hot Potato, and our communities. We have sort of a challenging community in my school, and we're doing some like really like sort of challenging work around this stuff. So I'm kind of involved with quite a bit of reading and thinking around kind of parental engagement at the moment. Albeit, yeah, it's not maths, but the principles still apply, I think, across whatever subject you're engaging with. And that's come out for me as a big thing, is like getting away from that kind of like school-centric fixing model. And I think like that, I think that's where we start with our engagement, is thinking, right, okay, going back to that point I said earlier about communicating maths, it's getting back to the communication that we have with our parents. It's really, really important. And I think, you know, the research points towards it, the best practices being systematic and part of a bigger program of parental engagement as well. So we're not just flashing the pan, oh, actually, right, yeah, we need to do some maths parental engagement, let's whack a thing on in T3. Oh, we haven't done that for a while now, let's whack a thing on in, it's too late now, let's push it to September. No, it needs to be thought out. It needs to be part of a bigger program, a wider offer that includes everything from drop-ins, reach out, you know, all different ways. You've got to be creative about the way you engage your parental community. And I think that, so for me, in terms of a bigger picture, kind of like what the ideal engagement looks like, I think those principles need to be sat at the heart of it when you're thinking about doing it. And I think, you know, largely proactivity is a massive thing, is not shying away from ringing up parents and having conversations with hard to reach parents. Go out and get them, like go out, like seek what bring, try and find what the barriers are for those parents and try and pull them down, you know, like as best you can. You're not going to pull them all down, but you do everything in your power as a school to try and communicate and engage in that way. And I think if you go from that footing with maths workshops, I think you're on the right sort of lines, if you will.
I do think that deficit is prevalent, and I've been that maths lead who has been said, you know, told or decided, oh yeah, term three, let's show everyone how we teach maths. And really, it took me a long time to get to the point where actually I felt like I was actually having an impact on attitudes and the way maths was interpreted by our wider community. Because, you know, because, yeah, I mean, my last role, you know, one of the school leaders, you know, said to me, it's really important that we make sure you go into this thinking and realizing that every parent wants the best for their kids, and they're more than capable of supporting, you know, if they're given the right tools. And so, yeah, I think you're, you know, absolutely. I mean, tell us more about what you're doing. with this project, and I'm because RSE, like you say, it's a BHP, a big hot potato, and probably requires a lot of careful and deliberate sort of decision making. You know, is there anything we can learn from that if we're, say, a maths lead or if we're a literacy lead and we are thinking about how we engage? You know, because I reckon a lot of this will move across all subjects. I mean, something I'm going to be really specific about, but so far, I think, you know, education is important. All the subjects are important, or otherwise we wouldn't teach them. And so, yeah, sorry, Lloyd, I'll stop. And what do you reckon we can learn from your exploits so far?
I mean, I'm by no means any expert at this. Like, which is something that I'm learning as I'm going along with this as well, about and sort of getting things wrong and learning from that as well. And but in terms of our from a personal development angle this year, we've got it's been a big part of our sort of school learning plan and our priorities. And so we've designed like a kind of like almost like a parental pathway for this RSE thing. So we've like laid out a series of events across the whole year that are building towards an like a kind of end outcome that we're going to evaluate. We've targeted groups who we know that had problems and issues and raised it with us and started there. You know, so start with your heart. We've started with those hard to reach parents. Start It's those ones, it's like you make those phone calls you don't want to make because you know they're going to be like, oh, I've got to ring that pet. But ring them, like be brave and ring them and go out and just and be open on the, you know, listen. Because and where we've started, we've gone from a point of the beginning of it is very much like consultation, discussion, very open, not very directed. And we build trust as we go along. We've thought carefully about the like times of day we do it. They can pick their children up and so on and so forth. But being proactive, go out, ring, ask them, oh, come for a cuppa and a biscuit. Yeah. You know, all this kind of stuff. And then mapping that carefully out so that it builds bit by bit incrementally in terms of the information. So we actually said in the first session, there is no information in this session, but we just want to listen to you. Like, what are you scared of? What are the problems for you? What do you, and we let them talk for an hour and just wrote things down. And we said, yeah, no. And they wanted answers. I said, look, we will get to these answers, but just let's listen. Brilliant. Thanks for telling us that. Excellent. Excellent. You know, and we had to manage it. And it was, and don't get me wrong, challenging at times, you know, when you've got some difficult opinions and things, I don't think you're going to get as strong opinions in maths, perhaps, but the idea of listening to your parents and getting them around a table and going, what is it you find hard? Like, you know, what stops you from helping children? What do you find it, you know, listen to them and then start to shape the program based on what's come out of that. And that's nothing new. And people do questionnaires and so on and so forth, but make it systematic and kind of bed that into a longer program of events. So we've got a specialist coming in to help us moderate a session in there towards the end of the year, who's a PSHE, works with difficult, challenging groups and things. He's going to moderate a session so that there's a sort of a third person there between the school and the community, to, like you would with attendance, kind of that barrier between help, a kind of buffer zone between you and the school as well. Obviously, like you say, it's a more challenging subject, but I think that idea of mapping it out carefully, thinking about what you want to introduce when, thinking about how you want to listen and then communicate, and that balance of those two things until it like culminates into an end point that you want to evaluate. And then think about then what would be the next part for the program following on, and embed those practices into a longer term sort of approach for the school.
I feel like we could just listen to Lloyd talk about engaging parents and being a school leader for days. Do you ever just sit there and go, gosh, what a guy, what a leader. That sounds really good. God, did you know?
I mean, he still needs to write his book, doesn't he? So when's that happening, yes. Lloyd?
He and the person who's just walked back in the house. I think what you said there about kind of engaging parents and having that timeline of different kinds of activities across the year and thinking about who you're tackling and when and who you're engaging can completely make sense and is 100% transferable to maths, anything else that we're thinking about. I think, you know, you talk to lots of people in schools, and one of their biggest hurdles is parental engagement and knowing where to go. So I hope that lots of people have listened to that and taken that on board, because I do think that's a solid place to start. It has to be carefully thought out and planned, like anything we do. It can't just be off the cuff. Oh great, let's do that maths workshop now. What shall I do it on? Oh, I don't know, do it on manipulatives, explain how we use them. Great, but what's the point? What do we want from this? What's the outcome? What is our goal here? I think a lot of that is missing. I hope we do that when it comes to school improvement and curriculum and pedagogy, but I think we're lacking somewhat when it comes to parental engagement. We forget that that's like sensible practice. A thing that I did in my NQT and NQT plus one years, which at the time was quite frankly a which I'm assuming I can say, that doesn't make it explicit. We used to do kind of like maths game kind of mornings. It was straight after drop off so that the parents were on site already. They didn't have to leave and come back. And at the time it was a bit of ag, because I was going, oh, what games am I going to play? Oh, is behaviour going to be okay? But that was as like a fresh baby teacher in a challenging context. But thinking back to it, we played some really good maths games that were easily played at home. And I think that kind of engagement, where it's like just saying, come and do this with us. We're not doing anything to you. Come and learn with your child. Come and facilitate it with the teacher. And it will be something that you can pick up and go. And yes, I think in the first time we did it, it was the parents you would expect, the ones who, you know, engage with everything, volunteer for every trip. But you do get that kind of that spillover effect, don't you? When, you know, if someone's doing it one day, then you'll get two more people, and then so on, and you eventually get the majority. And I look back on those and I think, oh, I totally see why we were doing them now. I see why we were getting the parents in the classroom. And yeah, it took us off timetable for 40 minutes on a, like, once a term or something, but it was worth it, because A, it meant that the parents saw the kinds of things we were doing that we valued, and that they could then replicate at home. And B, it showed the children that we are all part of the same team, and we're all working on this together. And I think I look back and I think, oh, that was invaluable, and I probably didn't make the most of it. And now I'm kind of kicking myself and thinking, shall I invite some parents in after Christmas? You never know.
You should. I mean, I can't believe we went 155 consecutive weeks without getting the explicit tag. Now we're explicit, and you can never be unexplicit. Such a shame. Such a shame. I mean, viewers won't know what expletive it was you, Shannon, because I will be putting in a Metal Gear Solid alert signed. It's place.
200,000 subscribers reveal Christmas Day. That's what I did.
Well, now I want people to tweet us what they think I said.
Even better.
That's a fun game for Christmas.
Well, yeah, last week, because I asked everyone to use the hashtag FrancoStan, and before the episode released on Saturday, there were zero tweets with the hashtag FrancoStan. And I can reveal that as of Sunday night, there were also zero tweets with FrancoStan. So either Peter's work isn't landing, or, you know, I know it was really well listened to relative to this time of year, last week's episode. Maybe it just didn't capture the zeitgeist, or they didn't listen to the whole way through. Where were we? Yeah, I mean, if I thought I was going to come in here like Neil Almond and make a controversial statement, but actually what I'm going to end up doing is suggesting that my experience ties both of your thoughts together. I suppose the controversial element is that I wouldn't spend any time teaching parents how we teach maths in school. As a parent, it's on the school to teach my boys. But last week, I talked about one of the key principles from the research into early maths, pedagogy, and research was one of the key indicators of the likely success of use of manipulatives is early experiential background. And in as much as if children have really rich mathematical experiences from a young age, then quite often symbolic explanations and models are sufficient because they've already made the connections in their heads. And so, you know, this is a hard won piece of knowledge in my head. You know, it's the old adage, knowledge without mileage is BS. I think it was Henry Rollins who said that. And really, over many, many years as subject leader, I tried the typical model where I would bring parents, carers, anyone who was interested in. I would do a little PowerPoint slide demonstration. This is how we teach maths. And sometimes I had one person there. One time really sticks in my mind where I had one person who didn't speak English there. And so I was wondering, you know, they were being very polite, but I think they're probably hoping that more people would be there so that they could, you know, it wouldn't be as intense for them. So one of the things I've learned is that we should try and bring the parents and the children in together and do stuff with them. Because when I've tried it without, either the numbers are low or I've had people walk out because they thought, you know, I did a thing with bead strings. First parent workshop, my last project, 2017. Brought the parents in to show them how to make bead strings, and you could take the bead strings home to use with your child, and here's some of the math to do it. And the parent was all, I thought my child was going to be here. I'm out of here. And so that was all. This is like the first month of my first time in this new project, and I was like, oh my goodness. And so from that day forward, it was okay, right? If I'm doing anything like this, I'm bringing the parents in with me. And so we did. And so we started with rock stars. We would last half hour of the day. We would put on rock music. We'd bring the parents in, explain what it was, how to log on, because the logging in, the younger they are, the harder that is. And then they would spend 30 minutes listening to like 80s hair metal music and watching their children have fun on rock stars, basically, you know? And then that we would do that maybe three times a week in each of the schools, and we would get a couple hundred in each school coming along to the things. So I think, yeah, involving the parents, like you said, Shannon, is really, really important, and makes a big difference if you're a school where you want to drive parental engagement, you know, and you're almost, you know, removing that barrier of, because, you know, this reticence to engage with mathematics is built up over a long, long time. You know, you're racking, it could be the best part of 20 years at least that these feelings have been bubbling. And so I think you remove a lot of the barriers if you say, okay, let's just have some fun. You know, we know how impactful rock stars can be when it's used consistently, so let's give them the tools to do it. You know, we repeated that with numbots because it's even more difficult for young children to log in, and so they do need parents with them and parents sitting beside them and stuff. But the big sort of thing, the big breakaway for us, or the big breakthrough for us, came whenever we read about this project. I think it was called the Ocean Project, and it was Dame Celia Hoyles. We were talking about engagement, and she said to me, you know, I've run this project in the past, and essentially it was about board games and parents. And so we sort of took a spin on that. And we, like you said, Lloyd, we identified those families who we thought would A, benefit enormously from it, but also B, were reasonably strong figures in our local community. And so, you know, I think the phrase hard to reach is debated at the minute. But everyone knows what you mean when you use that phrase. And, you know, perhaps I had that in mind when I made this group, but it was strong characters within the local community, those who would benefit most from it, is probably how I would describe the sort of key features of this group. And we outlined six different board games over, you know, for one each week. And so again, it would be either as you're dropping the kids off or as you're about to pick them up, I would introduce the game to the parents, carers, and then I would bring the kids in and then they would play with them. So we did Shut the Box, which, you know, everybody can get on board with, you know, and I think I've got a video on YouTube where I talk about the different levels of mathematics. You know, even just number recognition is part of the game, but also you can add, subtract, multiply, and divide. Many things. Then we bought everybody like six dice each and a little velvet bag that we put them in. And this didn't cost the school much money at all. But then they would take these things home with them. So Shut the Box costs about £3 on Amazon. I think we started with 10 families. So 30 quid for that. Maybe 30 quid for the dice. And then the following weeks would be games that involve playing cards, that kind of thing. And so we had this in our mind. Here are the ways that you can engage with your children in a social aspect, but also in a mathematically rich aspect too. So those experiential background elements that leads to sort of better engagement with the subject, because you see the patterns, because those patterns are in the games you play, you know, because, I don't know, kids want to win games, don't they? And if it's advantageous to them to understand how these numbers work to win the games, you know, like in Shut the Box, if you roll a double, then you your turn is over. And so, you know, your children are going to be looking out for that idea. And then so that means working out what the doubles are is half a step closer, I think. So we were reasonably strategic in as much as we mapped out the games. They increased in complexity as they went on. You know, like, I mean, some of the games with the dice and with dominoes, I didn't mention that we gave them dominoes as well. Domino sets are originally cheap too. There are versions where it's not about matching the pips. It's about the multiples or the factors that the pips make and stuff like that there. So it was getting more and more complex every week. But at the end, they had six different games and six different resources they could take home. And then hopefully that would feed into how they behaved at home and how they sort of interacted with each other. And parents did, you know, have many times said, "Oh, it's great. They don't want their screens. They want to play X, Y, and Z." And so if you start with that group who will then talk to other families in the local community and they'll think, "Oh yeah, yeah. Can we get involved with that? We, you know, we had people volunteering by the end." And this was just after COVID as well, or throughout, across and through. So they did well to engage with it. So yeah, so I think we scrap this is how we use manipulatives, this is how we explain place value, and in its place we think about the ways we want or would hope our families to interact with each other, because then we can give them tools if there is a deficit, you know. And parenting's not easy, you know, and so like you say, everybody's busy, so the last thing you might have time for is to work out, how can I give my kids a mathematically rich experience at home? So if we can almost bridge the gap between where they are and where they want to be, then we can perhaps, that's the best way to use our time. But I think starting with something like Rockstars and getting kids to listen to her metal music is the absolute way forward.
Just super quickly to add to that, something that we've done this year, which I think could add to what you're saying there, Kieran, is thinking about how parents access things as well. We've talked about this previously in a communications episode I remember chatting about before. But like, one little thing we've done is like, where we've done drop-in sessions or we've had like part of that thing, we followed them up like within 2 weeks with like a 1.5 minute, 2 minute like video that is a link on the phone. The scope that's sent out to every parent, and it's transcribed. So there's like the TikTok model, if you were like, you know, it comes, it's quick, it's accessible, and it just summarizes. And it could be summarizing a game, couldn't it? You know, it could be like, bam, right, just here we go. This is this game. Look out for it. Here's the link to it. Bam. And it just gives you a quick sort of overview, because thinking about how we engage parents, nearly all of them got phones, you know, like they've likely all got access now these days to just click a link through and watch that, and then so they're either reading it or hearing it. Even if they're in a busy place, they can just read what the video's about. It's things like that. It's trying to keep up with what's going on in society with media and tap into that. Dare I say it, clickbaity. You almost want clickbait parents, you know, you want them. And just give me an idea about like trying to give clickbait kind of like links to your parents. They go, "What's that?" You know, and then straight through to like a video about supertizing. But, you know, ultimately, I think we need to tap into that. And it just builds on what you're saying, Nick. It's like, again, it's that follow-up, isn't it? It's like how you, you know, like have the session and then follow it up and then another one and follow it. You know, it's that constant stream of information. But I mean, what you did there, I know I started doing that in my previous school when I was maths lead, because it was inspirational. It was an absolutely fantastic idea. So, and likewise, you know, Shannon, you were doing it as well. So learning from the best practice of others, you know, it's a great model.
I'm just imagining your shocked face. You won't believe what Mr. Williams Jones said about teaching and learning.
white background, right around my head.
A little Minecraft guy beside you on fire or something like that there.
I was picturing the clickbait article title for Subotizing just being like, you'll never guess how many ... And then they're like, oh, I need to know what is it? And then it's all about Subotizing. Well, you will know how many, and it's not a guess, because we know how we process that information. And it would be really interesting. So I think you go for it.
Want to know the inset day times next year? We'll tell you them later. Here's all about Shut the Box.
I mean, Kent Online is basically just clickbait.
Oh, isn't it just?
I don't think there's any reporting. I mean, will I get in trouble for saying that? But it's just
learn from the masters.
So if you want, yeah, I mean, can you remember your favorite child mathematicians from 30 years ago? Here's what they look like now. And then none of them are in the photographs.
Genius. It is genius. But it is actually genius. The thinking about how people, humans, engage with content online and then tailoring your parental engagement towards that. It's a genius move, and it's one I'll be stealing if I ever have the opportunity to make those decisions.
So, I mean, rounding off, thinking about games, what games can parents or carers play with their children? And obviously, I've alluded to a few, but what are your go-to games that you think encourage social interaction, but also a little bit of maths at the same time?
Can I go first? Because I haven't got many, and I know Shannon's got millions. So I'm just going to get my one out of the way.
Shannon's got at least 100.
100 at least. So I'm just going to, before you dive into the plethora of excellent ideas, just share sort of one that I found because of my daughter that I always plug and I love, and it's the tiny polka dot game. You can't see it there. What's happening here? There we go. The tiny polka dot game. Now, this game is, I don't actually know. I would advise schools to perhaps invest in some sets of these to loan out to parents and stuff, because it's a beautiful little game that has multiple representations on it. You obviously can't see these cards now, the home viewers, but they're all different mathematical representations from, I have the actual instructions here. We've got dots arranged in a 10 frame, dots arranged in classic dice patterns, dots in circles, two colors, doubles and doubles plus one, dots in variety of sizes and arbitrary arrangements, and then the numerals from 0 to 10. And there's a whole different selection of games in there that progressively get more complicated, but it's an absolutely brilliant set to have. And I would honestly, genuinely, they're a lovely little company, the American company. But the tiny polka dot game would be my little contribution to games to have. The only other ones I would say would be, I'm a big board game. I love board games. So any board games are great, because I think they just develop. I think one particular shout out here, and we've talked about this before, is Diamant, which is a pretty cool game about, and it's very, very simple, about going into a mine, and there's a bit of jeopardy. You either go further into the mine or you don't, but it's a lovely way. I think, Kieran, you said your son learned how to divide with remainders. You don't even know you're doing it, because you're splitting gems between people and things. So simple, but again, school, and it's quite cheap. I think you can pick that up for about 10 quid 10 15 quid. You know, get a job lot of those and give them out to parents, and they're my recommendations. Sorry, a bit slim pickings, but that's what my sort of contribution to this section.
I've now crossed Shut the Box board games and tiny polka dot games off my list, I would 100% echo what you said about the lovely dot games. You introduced me to it. I then bought lots of sets for my old school when I was maths lead. And we sent home examples to parents, and I sent them a link, and to some parents we lent them a copy if they'd asked for it. And there's like 12 different games in there, isn't there? There's so many different variations you can do. And I've watched you play them, not by yourself, with your daughter, and they're great. So definitely shout out for that one. I have got a short list in no particular order. I was a big countdown nerd as a child. So one of the games I've got written down is the countdown numbers game. Obviously, the letters game is fun too, but we're here for numbers. So you pick a total, you get like one from the top or two from the top and some from the bottom. It's a classic, but I think when you're past that sort of supervising and early number stuff, which is obviously very valuable, that's like a nice next step on. And just making a three-digit number is a lot of fun, and it's something I still do with my children now. I'm going to rattle these off, so I apologize. And if you want to dive in, guys, just shout. Idea number four in 100 Ideas for Primary Teachers Maths is like a guess who game, but with numbers, which I think is a lot of fun. So kind of getting children to think quite deeply about how they can describe a number, and how you can work out what number it is and what number it is, and thinking about factors or whether it's even or odd. I think that's a nice game. Anything that's a variation on bingo, like times table bingo, number one bingo, big fan. I love a bingo game in any kind of subject, but particularly maths. 24 is a great game. There's a like a game that you can buy online called 24, where it's all set out for you, and you put down a card, and it has the four different numbers, and you have to make 24 or the closest you can get to 24, and you can add, subtract, multiply, divide. But you could also do that with just a deck of cards or some number cards or digit cards at home. They're great. It's a great game, and also I'm really good at it, so it's one that I would recommend wholeheartedly. Like the game where you like race to 100, that's a lot of fun. The game where you play where you have to get to 21, or the person that says 21 is the loser. That's when I was a nanny, many moons ago, when I was driving home after picking them up from school. That's a game we'd play in the car, and it's simple as you can either say one, two, or three consecutive numbers, and then the loser says 21. So you start thinking ahead and working out, or what's coming next, or how many can I say. And that's one you can play in the car, which I think is a lot of fun. The yes game, which is idea 28 in 100 Ideas for Primary Teachers Maths, where you're thinking about times tables. So it's a game that I play sometimes with my children now, if we've got 2 minutes before lunch, where you kind of go around in a circle, you're thinking about your times table that you're learning at the moment. We were just learning our sixes, so you go up in ones to start with. So you'd say 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, yes. And so for every multiple of that number, you say yes. And then you can make it more complicated by saying, right, this time we're skip counting in twos or threes. And then you have to start really deeply thinking about what number comes next, and also is it a multiple of the one that you're thinking of. And that's one that every class I've played it with have loved it, despite the fact for a lot of the time we're just counting in ones. And actually, it's amazing how many errors they can make. Battle frames, idea number three, which maybe I'll do an extended snippet about battle frames for the podcast going forward. But that's a lovely game where you've got some counters arranged on a 10 frame, and that's something you can do at home really easily. And you have to, and you have the certain rules about how you lay them out, whether you have it horizontal or vertical, and you lay from the bottom down or the top down, the bottom up or the top down, or left to right. As long as you've got that kind of agreed convention of how you're putting the counters down, then you start asking yes no questions about what that number is. So things like, is the top row full, or is the left-hand column full, or have you got three empty spaces? So you can start again just visualizing numbers. Things like I'm thinking of a number, like a target number game. I know these are more maths games than social games, but I'm coming from a place where I was a huge nerd as a child and I just loved numbers. And I actually think a lot of our children do just love numbers. That element of a bit of competition, even if it's with themselves, it is fun to try and meet a target or guess something. And a lot of the time, I think, like you said, Lloyd, when you're playing board games, you don't necessarily even consider the maths you're doing, but you are doing maths. I've got other ones, but I feel like I'm going to be boring the listeners. So I'm just going to stop there and maybe I'll dive in again in a moment.
It's almost like we could have a regular feature on the show, isn't it? That we could have some sort of feature that where Shannon shared some of these ideas, like some sort of corner of the show that would perhaps lend to that. I don't know.
Maybe for 2024, I'll prep some ideas.
You say maybe. Lloyd has already agreed to have the theme tune ready by the end of this week.
I've started working on it.
And I'm sure he's working on the Kofi theme as well, because the whole Barbie craze has gone. And I didn't even request Barbie Girl. I asked for a take on Dr. Jones, and you gave me Barbie Girl.
Barbenheimer, mate.
I am become Tadabe. I mean, yeah, it's really interesting because you guys are obviously highlighting that there are, you know, as maths leads, there are probably two distinctions we need to draw, in as much as there are games that have been devised with maths in mind, like some of them, you know, where you get the four cards and you got to place the digits in different places to try and make, you know, that's a game that has been made with a mathematical idea in mind. But there are others where the maths is incidental. You know, nobody, well, maybe they did. Snakes and Ladders, you know, at its most fundamental, there's lots of maths involved. But it's not seen as a maths-specific game, if that makes sense. So, yes, we got to be aware of that. I think, as you were also talking, I was thinking, as maths is, we got to be aware that lots of the opportunities we see in the games comes from our knowledge and understanding of what pupils should know at given times. So for instance, as you guys were talking about, you know, like you said, in Diamant, Oscar just divined the concept of remainders. As well, you know, wow, that'll save his teacher a couple of weeks. But with Monopoly, you basically got 3-digit addition, certainly multiples of 10 and 50. You know, I suppose there are ones in there as well, aren't there, and fives and things like that. So you probably got a pretty decent range of three. But unless you realize that kids are learning that in year 3/year 4, you're not necessarily looking out for it. And so maybe there's something to be done in terms of drawing those connections and saying which games are ideal. Because I've made a little book of games for families, which covers games that we encouraged our families to play. I mean, I was working with Virtual Schools Kent, and we give this little booklet to all the carers in Kent at one point, because they were keen to engage at home and they were keen to listen to my ideas about engaging through this sort of social aspect. And for a long time, it was saved in Publisher and I had no way of opening it. But Tricia Moss has very kindly sent me it converted into a Word document. And so my aim is to have this up available for people to download, let's say at the start of 2024, because I'm just thinking, do I need to connect it to the curriculum? Or maybe that's just a subject leader job, you know? Maybe I'll put it in order as I see it, but some of the games you can get more out of, you know? I was quite happy with my little book of games until I've listened to you guys thinking, oh no, I really should link this, because it's in Shut the Box. It's known what, you know, do I want them to supervise, you know? Because I remember spending time with the boys, you know, don't count them. How many do you see? Do I want them to find the product? Do I want them to subtract, you know? Do I want them to mix it up so they can use as many different versions? And that comes over time. But yeah, so I mean, so that's less a list of games that I would suggest and more some things that I've realized as I was listening to you guys, you know. But I mean, some of the games in the book, things like, I mean, there's one called Matador, which, you know, I don't know how appropriate the name Matador is, but essentially it's similar to dominoes, but I think you're looking for multiples of five instead of matching, or at the end of the game, if anyone's score is a multiple of five, that kind of thing. But yeah, first to add up, those kind of things, and fast facts, like you said, Shannon. But then there's also a game called Skyjo. So for instance, if your child is near four and you're unnumbered, sort of direct number, negative numbers, then this game, your score fluctuates based on the cards that you have. And so you can go up and down, you can bridge that boundary of zero. So I've done a terrible job of recommending games. All I'll say is that I'll try and have this little book out so that I make up for that that glaring, shortcoming, you know. But it's essentially, yeah, it's mostly games that have been devised with maths in mind, but variations of popular games, or games that certainly were popular, that then makes them mathematics focused, you know. But my recommendations are all, you know, like, look for the maths in the games that you're already playing, or the games that, you know, like Monopoly. You know, there's a Fortnite Monopoly. I don't think it involves money though, so you might be losing that element of the maths, but you do have to add and subtract one, different, you have to add and subtract based on how things go and stuff like that. So
There's one I got lined up for Christmas for my daughter called King Domino, which is meant to be excellent. So I'll report back in a later episode whether that was successful or not. But I believe that's kind of it's math based as well. But comes highly recommended for sort of her age, you know, sort of 6, 7, 8. So I will keep eyes open. But there's so many games available now these days. I reckon that's got legs, that Kieran, to be a compendium of sort of updated maths games and what they bring and when you would add them in. There's a whole nother business there for you.
Well, never mind business, but let's use the Discord for that. We'll start a thread in one of the Discord channels where we outline the games we're playing, because the boys play games all the time and games I've never seen before. And so, yeah, well, we're checking out. I mean, because you got classics like Rummy Cub, stuff like that there, you know, because you got to make 30 before you can play in Rummy Cub, that kind of thing. And then, you know, I don't know, Yahtzee is mostly score counting, but yeah, lots of maths in the world around us. And I'm looking forward to Shannon's Corner, which, maybe next week. You never know. So I think I'm going to try and summarize our chat, because I was listening back to one of the episodes for some work I was doing, and I forgot that we used to summarize things at the end. So, you know, not a professional. But essentially, the things I've written down, the notes I've got, are that we shouldn't have a deficit model in mind when we begin. So that's the first thing we need to do. We need to be on a strategic footing for the organization and preparation of workshops. We need to start with deliberately chosen families based on, I don't know, our context and the needs of the school. We do with, not to. And then one final one is that we should connect what children should know, or what we hope they'll know, or what we hope they'll practice, to the games that we play. And I think if we do that, then we have a chance of engaging our families with mathematics. And I know it's a cultural thing. This, I'm not very good at maths. It's ingrained in our, you know, the psyche of the four home nations. But hopefully bit by bit, we can start to turn the tide. Who knows? All that's left to do is say, I hope you have a very Merry Christmas or winter break, wherever you are. Thank you for joining me, Lloyd.
Thank you very much. Nadolig Clawen.
What did you say to me?
I said Nadolig Clawen, which is Merry Christmas in Welsh.
Yeah, you'd be sitting on the other side of your face, mate.
Yeah, Google it.
Yeah, no, Nadolig Shanadich. No. Yeah, I mean, those Celts, cross borders.
Looking forward to Shannon's language of Merry Christmas. To be fun.
Thank you for joining me, Shannon.
Thank you for having me. Merry Christmas.
And everyone at home, until next time, thanks for listening.